Chapter 25, Baltimore, 1945. It was August 1st, 1945, and though hostilities continued in the Pacific Theater, the Second World War had ended in Europe. Rations were being lifted, troops were coming home, and the Red Cross was beginning collections to aid those families whose sons would not return. Despite the tremendous sacrifice, most of the world was jubilant at the news the fighting was finally coming to an end. In the science section of the New Jersey's The Daily Record, the headline read, "Amputees Can Drive." The accompanying article featured stories of soldiers who, missing arms or legs, were regaining their independence by learning to drive specially modified automobiles. At the bottom of the page, a short article made mention of, quote, "an unusual mental illness affecting children of intelligent parents in which the small patients live in a world of their own." The author was a syndicated science writer, and her story would appear in several newspapers throughout the country, the first time the general public would have ever heard of juvenile autism. There were now 20 children in Connor's grouping, and nearly every mother mentioned a particular symptom. Their child would not respond to being picked up. Most children will adjust their body in anticipation of being lifted into their parents' arms. Whether it be a stiffened neck, shrugged shoulders, or even changes in facial expression, mothers immediately notice the lack of this anticipatory response. "The thing that upsets me most," one mother said, "is that I can't reach my baby." Even the nearly universal gesture of a toddler reaching up for their mother, arms extended towards them, was missing, a touching display of need that nearly any other parent would take for granted. Most of the children were able to display incredible rote memory, but their recitations of lengthy passages of poetry or religious creeds appeared to hold no meaning for them. This disconnect, incredible mental abilities in one regard, with mysterious deficiency in others, would make for one of the more unique attributes of Connor's discovery. However, its novelty would pale in comparison with one of the strangest aspects of the disorder. The author of the Daily Record article certainly wasn't the first to notice it, but highlighted the unusual pattern clearly. Quote, "Nearly half of the families of these children are represented in Who's Who or in American Men of Science, or both." End quote. It was a stunning revelation. After surveying the personalities and work habits of the parents of the children brought into Connor's clinic, nearly all of them were professionals of the highest caliber, many of them scientists, psychologists, or lawyers, a distinction never before associated with any illness, mental or otherwise. As Connor put it, they all come from highly intelligent families. Out of the original 11 children he had seen, 9 of their mothers were college graduates, an astonishing number given social mores of the day. One might assume this was due to their increased ability to pay for their children's treatment at a prestigious hospital like Johns Hopkins, but the pattern did not extend beyond these particular children. Connor and his psychiatric colleagues saw many other children at the same clinics with other disorders, but none of them featured exclusively highly intelligent parents as an attribute. For those who insist the appearance of autism wasn't new, but a previously misdiagnosed disorder caught up within the margins of other more broad mental illnesses, it's difficult to reckon how this peculiar trait, intelligent professional parents, had never been noticed before. For Connor, it wasn't a subtle distinction, but a completely unique feature, one of many, that only added to the syndrome's stark contrast with the many others he had already documented. Whether or not these parents were more likely to have their children immunized for diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis with the newer aluminum-containing vaccines, one cannot definitively say. Much effort had gone into making previous diphtheria shots available for those who could not afford them, so it would appear that expense was not an issue. Perhaps the difference was trust, a trait frequently thought to be more lacking in less intelligent groups of people. The professional psychiatrists and chemists may have been quick to accept word from their medical colleagues that the vaccines had finally been made safe, while the less trusting parents of working-class families steered far away based on the injection's poor track record. The special demographic of these parents made for interesting discussions as to why their children seemed to be disproportionately struck by the new illness, but created another topic of discussion around the origin of Connor syndrome that was equally vexing: heredity.